Want some bacon?
No, man, I don't eat pork.
Are you Jewish?
No, I ain't Jewish. I just don't dig on swine, that's all.
Why not?
Pigs are filthy animals. I don't eat filthy animals.
Yeah, but bacon tastes good. Pork chops taste good.
Hey, sewer rat may taste like pumpkin pie, but I'd never know because I wouldn't eat the filthy motherfuckers. Pigs sleep and root and shit. That's a filthy animal. I ain't eat nothing, ain't got sense enough to disregard its own feces.
How about a dog? Dog eats his own feces.
I don't eat dog either.
Yeah, but do you consider a dog to be a filthy animal?
I wouldn't go so far as to call a dog filthy, but they're definitely dirty. But dogs got personality. Personality goes a long way.
So by that rationale, if a pig had a better personality, he would cease to be a filthy animal. Is that true?
Well, we have to be talking about one charming motherfucking pig. I mean, he had to be 10 times more charming than that Arnold on Green Acres, you know what I'm saying?
Welcome to the Questo Show.
Here we go. All right. Crespodiso Film School bonus episode time. Welcome to Cinema Crespodiso. I'm your host, Chris Crespo, hanging out with Jessica Agra and Drew.
What up, bro?
How's it going, good sir?
It's going. It's another bonus episode.
Another boner episode. Welcome to
it's
it.
It's not a...
Huh? What? It's not a what?
You always say that.
Say what?
It kind of bugs me.
Say what? What is that?
Boner episode.
Boner! Hi, you. I need a whoop, whoop, whoop.
Are you
thing.
Rocking one while we're doing this? Is
rocking
that the way it works?
Boner. Every time we do a show, man, as soon as the mic goes on, you go on. It's totally limp until I say welcome.
And then boom.
Pow! One of those things.
Just pow. Just rock hard for the entire show.
And then when we take a break and I say, I'll be right back. Like that.
It's kind of strange.
Like I get lightheaded from the blood rush.
It's kind of strange.
It is strange.
You shouldn't get that lightheaded. It's not that large.
Hi-yo! How would he know? How would he know they're asking? At home, silently, to themselves. Now I'm narrating the thoughts of the listeners. See what you got us started off on, Drew? I blame this all on you.
I blame it on you. You're the one who's...
You're the one who's fixated on my boner. On my boners, my episode... You're the one who brought up the episode boners. Let the record show. Let's rewind it.
It bugs me when you say boner episode. Okay. That's all I'm saying. All
right. Someone slept on the wrong side of douchebag bed today.
It's every day. It bugs me every time you say it.
I do work on saying boner constantly. I do say boner in day-to-day life as much as possible.
Do you?
Yeah, haven't you noticed?
No.
I thought that's why I got you so annoyed with it.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. Play it along. You gotta learn how to play it along. Anyway, Crespodiso Film School. We've done a bunch of these before. We've done, what have we done, Drew? We've done a Nolan.
We've done a few on stuff.
We've done a Scorsese.
Yes, we have.
We've done
some other things.
All right, so.
We did some genres, didn't we? Did we do a genre or two?
We did horror. We did a horror genre, and we did a bunch of things. I think it's been a few episodes since we've done a director one.
If you say so.
I believe... I'm thinking, what was the last Crespodiso film? What was
I don't remember.
Thinking. So many. So much has happened between then and now. Anyway. In case you didn't know, by the intro and by the title of the episode or the picture that comes with the episode that shows all the movies, we're talking about Quentin Tarantino movies. Also, if you follow me on Facebook, you probably know why I asked a certain question. You know, Drew, I put stuff on the Facebook all the time.
On the Book of Faces?
On the Book of Faces all the time. I get like two comments, one like. Tattoo it on your face. And but if you put up the right question, especially one asking some sort of opinion, an easy opinion to have.
Opinion poll.
Man, they come out of the woodwork.
Do they?
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Just blowing up the phone. Like, gas. You get it.
I always find it interesting on the Book of Faces on who likes what posts.
Who, yeah.
Like, sometimes I put stuff out there, and I'm like, this is gold.
Gold!
Crickets, man. Other times, I'm like, whatever, this is retarded, and then, like, the entire world loves it. It's so strange.
The entire world. If you want to find Drew on any of them social medias, it's AntiHero419, except for Facebook. Although, maybe if you search Facebook AntiHero419, they'll find him anyway. In which case, good luck getting him to friend you. because that ain't happening.
It's actually facebook.com/antihero419.
Oh, is it really? Yeah. Oh, so he's always on it. Yeah. He's not really trying to hide very hard, people. So I did a poll. I just, you know, put up there. Hey, what? And also put this out on Twitter at Crespodisto and at I am Chris Crespo. Quentin Tarantino movies, what are your favorites? If you want to do like a top three or a list, whatever. Informal poll, totally unscientific, not mathematical. So therefore, totally binding. Here we go. As per the people, what movie? Well, first off, every Quentin Tarantino movie. Uh-huh. That he's either wrote or directed.
Uh-huh.
Voted at least once.
Okay, so that's good.
So every one of his movies is a favorite of somebody.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Which one do you think got the most likes, so to speak? The most votes?
Either Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, man.
Because those are like the two everybody likes.
Pulp Fiction got 7 favorites.
Uh-huh.
And Reservoir Dogs got 6. So they're right next to each other. Right next to each other.
Is that not the number one?
Here's how this one's number one. This one's number one because Quentin Tarantino still considers it one movie, and I henceforth also consider it one movie.
So Kill Bill.
Kill Bill.
One movie? Kill Bill?
9 total likes. A number of people said Kill Bill 1 and 2. Some people were like number 2 and then number 1. Some people were like just number 2. But I just combined them all as Kill Bill votes. It is one movie. One person even said Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair, which is
it's the
name of the cut he's shown on occasion. He's shown that.
Yeah.
People have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So how come we...
You have to do it yourself. It's a DIY project.
Yeah, but he does certain things. Anyway. Plus, I got that. We'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it when we talk about Kill Bill. So then going down from there, Jackie Brown,
mm-hmm.
4 votes. From Dusk Till Dawn with 4 votes.
Huh?
A movie that he did the screenplay and he acted.
I was about to say, he does a lot of acting in that one.
He's one of the main characters in that movie, which is one of the reasons why he opted out of... He thought about directing it himself, and he opted out because he was like, you know, I'm going to focus on the acting a little bit more. And I guess of all the things he's been an actor in...
He's probably the best.
The best. But,
well, it's him and... It's so weird. It's him and... Young George Clooney.
Young George Clooney. Like, even then, was still...
he was just ER guy. He was just the cute guy on ER.
But even then, when he was young, he still had like kind of peppery hair.
Yeah.
And
back then, he was a nobody.
It was George Clooney with a neck tattoo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was... At that point in time, I was like, oh, man, this guy. He can do some stuff.
Like, oh, this guy. This pretty boy.
Yeah.
From that medical soap nighttime drama.
And now he's George Clooney.
Now he's fucking elder statesman George Clooney. Now he's like... People are asking him to run for politics and shit. He's
really?
Like, yeah, he's like, no,
he could. He could. He could do the Reagan thing and totally get in.
He could get in, but he doesn't want to because he's
good for him.
An honorable person.
Yeah.
4 for Jackie Brown, 4 for From Dusk Till Dawn, 3 for Django Unchained, 2 for Inglourious Basterds, 1 for Death Proof. Did I say 3 for True Romance?
No.
3 for True Romance, 1 for Death Proof, 1 for Natural Born.
Make it 4, Chris.
So that would be your favorite?
Oh,
True Romance is yours?
By far.
He wrote that one.
I know. And I don't know why. Obviously, he wrote it, and it's fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. But
and Tony Scott directed.
I don't think at the point in time when True Romance was made that Quentin Tarantino himself could have gotten the cast that is in the movie.
That's debatable because... He did Reservoir Dogs and True Romance. He wrote those screenplays at the same time. No, I'm sorry. Reservoir Dogs. Yeah, Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah, that's possible. But he was still able to put together that Reservoir Dogs cast based on no money. And also he calls Harvey Keitel, read the screenplay. It was like, I want to do this movie and I want to produce it. He was going to make Reservoir Dogs for $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Harvey Keitel got the script from like a friend of a friend, called up Tarantino, was like, hold on, let me be in this movie. I'll produce it and I'll raise you some money. Got him, his budget went from $30,000 to $1.5
million.
Yeah. Even then, that's nothing to make a movie. So what happened? He had these 2 screenplays though. Shopping around. Everyone wanted to make these fucking things.
Yeah.
Tony Scott wanted to direct Reservoir Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And Tarantino was like, no.
I'm doing it.
This one's mine. You can do this one. He gave him True Romance. So, at that time, it is possible.
At that time in his career, I don't think he had the clout.
At,
to get those people.
For the budget he would have got, maybe Tony Scott got a bigger budget, because by that time he was totally the guy who did Top Gun and Beverly Hills Cop too, you know, so he was able to get more money.
And
but it wasn't very long afterwards, though. After Reservoir Dogs dropped, everyone wanted to work with this guy.
Of course.
Yeah, which is pretty crazy.
Of course.
How quickly something like that can turn around.
But still, for me, the writing is fucking amazing.
It is.
Obviously.
Amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tony Scott is a good director. He's mm-hmm. he's good. He knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And the cast is just...
It's everyone.
It is probably the best cast movie ever.
And Christian Slater's even good in it, which is... Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. You have Christian Slater, who's actually good in it. Patricia Arquette, she has on and off days. She's really good in this, great. Too.
James Gandolfini.
Gandolfini is amazing. Yeah. Christopher Walken, one of the best performances ever.
Walken.
Dennis
Hopper.
Dennis Hopper. That scene is one of the best scenes of, like, all time.
Seems ridiculous. Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt's a stoner on the couch.
Michael Rappaport is his roommate buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
Bronson Pinchot is the producer. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
The cokehead guy. And then who played the dude? And then there's another guy. And then there was that other dude.
Gary Oldman?
Gary Oldman. Samuel Jackson showed up and got shot.
Yeah. I mean, it's for me, hands down, the best.
Interesting. Interesting. For me... for me, it's tough. It's really tough. Of all his... almost on any day, it could be something different.
That's my two through the rest. Everything else, I'm really sketchy about. But I know that True Romance for me is the one.
Is it? Well, for me, if I had to make a choice at this moment, right now,
today,
like right now,
yeah,
I would go.
Got to make a decision, Chris.
I would go Inglourious Basterds. And I'll talk about why when we talk about Inglourious Basterds.
I think I know why.
But if it's not that, it would either be Django or Kill Bill or Jackie Brown. It really is between those movies.
Yeah.
They're all just like, they're Pulp Fiction's so good. And yeah. Reservoir Dogs. So he makes True Romance. Well, uh-huh. He writes True Romance. It gets made. It's produced at the same time. Reservoir Dogs comes out first.
Yes.
92.
Uh-huh.
It's awesome. Heist movie. It's got that scene where Tarantino's in it again, right? He's got the scene in the beginning where in the coffee shop, and right away it's a Tarantino style mm-hmm. of the long dialogue scenes and the camera that's like usually long takes, right? Involved conversations about pop cultural references. He's the one that started that shit.
Yeah.
You know, now it's like taken for granted that these things happen in movies, that people talk about stuff that actually happened. When he was talking about the Madonna video, like originally, it was like, dick. Apparently, Madonna sent him a copy of her album, Erotica, after she saw that movie, and then wrote him a note, said, it's not about dicks, it's about love, Madonna. Which is pretty funny. It's been good for her. She saw it.
She loves dicks.
She had a sense of humor. Like I said, Harvey Keitel is the one who made that movie happen.
Yeah.
And then since then, Harvey Keitel has been in a bunch of his movies, a good chunk. Even in like, Inglourious Basterds, he's just a voice on the other end of a radio at one point. But you're listening, you're like, is that Harvey Keitel?
That's Harvey.
That's fucking Harvey. Did you know Quentin Tarantino dropped out of high school at the age of 16?
Yes. Because I also read the IMDb Did You Know thing.
Oh, I got this from somewhere else, but yes, that's a very well-known fact. Did you know why he did it?
To pursue his film career, right?
To train as an actor at the James Best Theater Company. But then he became bored with this 2 years later and dropped out.
Good for him.
So he quit school to go to a theater company and then quit that 2 years later.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing about, you know, he worked at a video store. Everyone knows about that. He gave people references and shit. That's how he came up with the Reservoir Dogs name. So, do I even have that here? He suggested Reservoir de la Fond or something like that to a customer, and a customer said to him, man, I don't care about no Reservoir Dogs. And Tarantino remembered that, and then he named us for the first movie that, even though it's never said in the movie, and it doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
What is a Reservoir Dog?
I have no idea.
But it sounds cool. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about, right? Influenced by movies like Taking the Pelham 1-2-3. That's where he got the whole Mr. Orange, Mr. Brown from. They use coded names like that in the original Taking the Pelham 1-2-3. movies like that, like Godard movies with the whole the shifting of the timelines. You know, that became a big signature thing of his. Between that and Pulp Fiction, the non-linear storytelling. I mean, he just took all that from French New Wave cinema. You know, it's all good because he does it right. People steal shit all the time.
Yeah,
I mean, look at all the people ripping off Tarantino.
Of course.
And how awful it all is.
Yeah, it's pretty bad,
right?
Because they're ripping off him.
And you got to rip off the guys he ripped off.
You got to rip off the sources. Yes. Yes, precisely.
You got to do your research. Find out who is like, who's your favorite band? All right, find out who they're ripping off and listen to them.
Yes.
It's like, you guys really like Tool? Listen to King Crimson. You'll be very surprised.
Also, you know, in 94, and this, he's kind of like me, flaky with the movie likes over time. You know, if you ask me on a different day what my favorite movies are, I'll give you a different list.
Yeah.
In 94, right before he did Pulp Fiction, he did an interview with Charlie Rose, and he cited his three favorite movies at that time as Brian De Palma's Blowout, which I love, with John Travolta. Yeah. Rio Bravo, directed by Howard Hawks, who he also said is his all-time favorite director.
At the time.
Oh, no, that is, like, of all time, for sure. Howard Hawks is his favorite director. And his third favorite movie at that time was Taxi Driver, Scorsese. Oh,
very nice.
Right. And, you know, Scorsese and De Palma have been huge influences on his work. Sergio Leone.
Yeah.
Fistful of Dollars, Good and Bad and the Ugly, all those spaghetti westerns, as well as Sergio Corbucci, who he's like Sergio Leone, but way more violent and nihilistic.
Kind of like Tarantino.
Which is why Tarantino gravitated more towards the Corbucci stuff than the Leone stuff. You know, he likes it all. He likes the genre, the spaghetti western genre. And Corbucci is the guy who did the original Django with Frank Nero. Django Unchained. And I've seen this listed all over the internet. I think I've even seen it on the Wikipedias, which I could edit it if I wanted to. I'm too lazy. I don't have time to edit Wikipedia and fucking fix that shit. But Django Unchained is listed as a... like a remake or a sequel to Django, and that's totally not the case. He just borrowed the name Django.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. So 94. After Reservoir Dogs is a huge hit, he's able to get together an awesome cast. Now the people are clamoring to work with him. He gets an awesome cast. What is that? What is this?
I figured out how George Clooney got in From Dusk Till Dawn. I figured it out.
A bunch of other people turned it down?
No.
Because that is what happened. A lot of other people were like, no thanks.
I'm sure, but...
Nah, thanks.
According to the IMDb...
He also shot on weekends.
According to the IMDb, Quentin Tarantino directed one episode of ER in 1995. And then in 1996...
Here you go.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
It's all about the connections. It is weird how he did an episode of ER. He's had a couple of weeks.
He also directed two episodes of CSI Crime Scene Investigation in 2000 in 2005.
Yeah.
So fucking weird.
Did they just have him drop pop cultural references in their episodes then?
Maybe.
And like,
I have no idea.
And some cool song. Hey, we upped our music budget.
And a whole lot of blood. We're seeing a bigger squib budget this time, guys.
A bigger squib condom budget. Because that's how he does in squibs. So, 94, people are like, we want to work with this guy. You know, Sylvester Stallone was like, I want to be Butch, you know, but and I'm going to Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis wanted to be the Vince Vega.
No.
But Tarantino wanted Michael Madsen. But then Michael Madsen dropped out to do Wyatt Earp. And then he got John Travolta, and John Travolta was like, I'll do Vincent Vega. And Bruce Willis was like, all right, I guess I'll do Butch. Shit got all twisty-turvy, mixed up.
But now, I mean, now that the movie's done the way it's done, it's like it couldn't be done any other way.
Like, who else would play these characters? Yeah. Right? They're all perfect. Apparently, if you check, if you're into this kind of stupid factoid, all the clocks in the pawn shop in Pulp Fiction are set to the same time.
Which time is that?
What time do you think, Drew? take a while, I guess.
420.
There you go.
Really?
Yep. Tarantino is a well-known stoner.
Still, that's a little...
Well-known. Low on the nose, QT. Yeah, he was in his 20s having fun.
Yeah.
Having a good time. Oh, did you know all these stupid facts here. I didn't see this on fucking IMDb. Did you know he played an Elvis impersonator?
Yes.
On the Golden Girls?
Yes. When we talked about his acting, I was actually going to bring that up.
Isn't that ridiculous?
But you already did.
Why would he do such a thing?
Yeah, man, dude, he's made some weird acting decisions as well, Mr. Crespo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's acted in more things than he's been in. I mean, he's in Pulp Fiction. Mm-hmm. He was trying to decide between two parts. He was either going to play the part that he ended up playing, which is the guy, what's his name, Jimmy?
Yeah.
Whatever, the Bonnie situation. And then it was either going to be him or Lance, the heroin dealer. Mm-hmm. And because he wanted to, like, be behind the camera for the whole stabbing Uma Thurman in the heart with the needle scene, he was like, I got to go kill the guy. Yeah. I got to put a direction of that part first. So I'll just get this Eric Stoltz weirdo.
No.
Eric Stoltz was almost Marty McFly. Oh, shit.
Just not do it.
That dropped from Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2. Actually, Quincy Jones composed that, and it's for Ironside. It's the old Ironside drum. So that's why that's in there. Not to denote any sort of game, but because it's Tarantino related.
Sure.
Did you know Quentin Tarantino's a huge fan of Half-Life?
Is he?
Yeah. The Half-Life computer game, yeah. And has considered trying to make a movie adaptation.
Oh, video game movies are so awful.
Don't do it, Quentin.
Although I think a Portal video game would be pretty easy. Because all it is just the Portal technology. That's all. Write a story around that. Simple enough.
Sure, a Portal. Like Stargate?
No. Portal. Okay, so Portal.
Oh boy, here we go.
It's real easy. You have a gun. Shoot. Let's say you shoot an in and an out, right? So you want to end up at work, right?
Okay.
In the morning.
Okay.
You shoot one portal.
Uh-huh.
At work.
Okay.
The other half of the portal is in your bedroom.
Okay.
Immediately from one spot to the next. Boom.
Teleportation.
No.
Through portals.
It's a portal. It's a.
Teleportation.
It's a put your own wormhole somewhere.
So you think Tarantino should make this portal movie? Is what you're saying?
I mean, it could be cool. Anybody can make a portal movie.
Okay.
Wormholes.
Wormholes. Tarantino holes.
Whoa. What?
Parent. Pulp Fiction comes out. It's huge. It played at the Cannes Film Festival.
Cannes.
I think it won some awards. Got that somewhere around here. And then it was like, shit. New kid on the block, Tarantino, can do whatever he wants. You know what he does immediately after that? Fucking not another movie, or at least not directing one. At that point, he had sold Natural Born Killers. Mm-hmm. Oliver Stone ended up making it.
Yeah.
Hugely controversial film.
It was a crazy movie.
But I think with that, too, is, Oliver Stone is a very distinctive artist himself.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he took the screenplay and did whatever to it. Not sure how much of it is Tarantino's, but still, it's credited as a Tarantino picture.
Yeah.
You know? And it fucking...
It's crazy.
It's an insane movie. Very violent. Very, very interesting.
It is very much in Tarantino's style. Even though it's not
even though it's
him directing.
Oliver Stone movie.
Well, because you can feel his writing all over it.
And also, you know, Tarantino was so influential with Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs that people were already imitating him like right after that. So who knows how much Stone was trying to be like, you know, let me see if I can get some of this hip young. By that point, he was already an old fart.
He still is.
He's an older fart now. He's an older farter guy now. Then he did Four Rooms, which was someone else's idea. This guy, Alexander something or other. And his idea was to make the movie with five segments and five directors. The fifth director was Richard Linklater.
Mm.
He had to drop out.
Nah.
They just stuck with four rooms. It was one room was the Alexander dude. One was some chick, forgot her name. One was Robert Rodriguez. And then one is Quentin Tarantino. Tarantino did the last one. And, two people. Yeah, two people even cited that as one of their favorite Tarantino directing things, The Accident.
No.
Bruce Willis is in it. Did that for free as a favor to Tarantino.
Nice.
As such, he's uncredited because SAG, Screen Actors Guild.
They would ask for money.
If you don't ask for money, that's illegal to them. And no. They're like, the only way you can let this happen and not get in trouble is if you go uncredited. And Bruce Willis was like, I'm Bruce Willis.
That's cool.
I don't need the credit. People see my face. They know who I am.
Yo.
I'm John McClane. I'm John motherfucking McClane. And at that time, people actually cared about that. I guess they still kind of care.
Well, yeah, I mean, he still is John McClane. I mean, he was John McClane last year, wasn't he?
I keep trying to forget that. Then, also ran out of time. Was it before Dusk Till Dawn? Yes, it was. Well, actually, it was before Four Rooms. Right around that time is when Robert Rodriguez, his buddy, put out Desperado.
Yeah.
And Tarantino has a role in that as a guy coming to pick up the drugs.
Correct.
And he tells that joke about pissing on the bar and pissing in the cup, right? And then makes the bet. And then he has to go through the shitty toilet into the fake room to buy the drugs. And then that guy shoots him in the face.
Yep.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, yo.
Good times. I do love that movie.
It is. It's fun.
And then the two of them did Dusk Till Dawn. You know how Dusk Till Dawn came about?
How?
Reservoir Dogs.
Uh-huh.
Famous ear cutting scene.
Yes.
All right. The special effect of the guy having no ear and all that, and Michael Madsen holds up the ear and was like, "Hey, can you hear me?" Like that. By the way, Michael Madsen hated doing that scene. Apparently, he's very squeamish, very anti-violent. He can't inflict pain on people. There were parts when he had to hit the cop. He was like, he hated doing it. He had to be talked into it. The cop ad-libs. The guy who played the cop ad-libs the line about having kids, mm-hmm. which wasn't in the script,
yeah.
and that broke Michael Madsen down because he had a kid.
Fuck, I can't do this.
He just had a kid, and he was like, "What? You can't say that shit to me, man." Just hysterical. And then when you watch the movie, he's like, "The sadistic, this horrible fuck."
Yeah.
Hey, Michael Madsen was a good actor.
Yeah, he was.
What happened? Because he's still acting.
Yeah, it's not very good though.
He ain't doing shit like that anymore. So anyway, the guy who did the special effect of the ear, all that stuff, he had an idea for a story.
Mm-hmm.
Told it to Tarantino. That's from Dusk Till Dawn. And he was like, "Yo, you want this ear thing? I'll do it for you on the super, super cheap, because you only got $1.5 million. If you write my screenplay for me." And Tarantino was like, "Deal." So he got the special ear effect for Reservoir Dogs, memorable scene. And then the guy paid Tarantino a paltry sum of $1,500 to write his screenplay for Dusk Till Dawn based on his story.
Yeah.
That's how the movie came about.
No, very nice.
So it was all a tit for tat thing there, you know? So one guy was just like, "I got this idea." And Tarantino was like, "Yeah, fuck it."
Cheech Marin's awesome in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Cheech Marin's awesome. Cheech Marin, he's wearing a badge, and it says, like, Omar Marin on it. That's his dad,
who
was LAPD. So Dusk Till Dawn.
I just like the pussy speech. You got black pussy, white pussy.
Yeah. Though I think I got the pussy drop here. So
yeah, it's a good one.
Where's the pussy drop?
You got black pussy, white pussy.
That's not it.
Hairy pussy. We got goat pussy. What's that? If you find pussy we don't have here, fuck it, right? Is that the line at the end?
Something like that. Next movie, Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
He did Jackie Brown in part because for Pulp Fiction, Pam Grier came in and read for, I don't know if she read for Mia Wallace, but she read for some part.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't get it. She wasn't right for it, but Tarantino was like, "You're amazing. Plus, I remember you from Coffee and, you know, fucking Foxy Brown, all this shit." So he adapted, loosely adapted, an Elmore Leonard novel into Jackie Brown, changed Jackie Brown from white to black, only so he could then cast Pam Grier in the movie. Yes. And he straight up, like, wrote the role for her. He's like, "I want Pam Grier in this fucking movie." Which is amazing. Was that late 90s, 97, something like that?
No.
How many movies at that time, you know, Hollywood films were, even fuck then, how about now, how many movies are made featuring black middle-aged leading characters? Black middle-aged females as your lead character.
Very few.
I would hazard to say none. None in years. When was the last one to feature a 40-year-old black woman as your lead? As your
I don't know. What was the last movie Halle Berry was in?
Catwoman? And even then, she was in her 30s. She was still in her smoking hot 30s. And you know what? She's still in her smoking hot 40s.
Yeah, she can is.
Still, she can still lead anything if it was up to me. So Jackie Brown is already distinct from everything else he's done, True Romance, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, because it is based on pre-existing material. It's Elmore Leonard. So he had a story that he could work with and characters that he could work with. And then obviously he interprets things and puts it through his own filter. At the end of the day, it's a fucking Tarantino movie. You know, a ton of Elmore Leonard novels have been made into movies. The only one that even comes close to feeling like a Tarantino movie is Get Shorty. It's like, what if Tarantino made a straight-up comedy? Then it might be Get Shorty.
Maybe.
But even then.
Still be a little, there'd be more blood.
Oh, Get Shorty is so good. That's a good one. But everything else. I mean, movies like The Big Bounce. Remember that one?
No.
Of course not. Be Cool, that Get Shorty sequel.
The only thing I remember about that is that it was awful.
It was terrible. So,
and The Rock was gay, right?
Rock played a gay character. Yeah. I remember The Rock being the best part of that movie. Yeah. That was back when he was still like The Rock. Oh. And he was trying to like show you, hey, I can do stuff. Mm-hmm. And now we're all like, oh, it's Dwayne Johnson. He can be in my movie any day. Especially if I need a giant man to do some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does as well. So Jackie Brown, obviously, then he's drawn from this whole blaxploitation thing on that one. I saw 70s movies. That's how you get Robert Forster in there. He wanted Robert Forster for like another movie, but it didn't work out. So he saw him in a restaurant one day, and he just handed him the script for Jackie Brown. And it was like, you're going to be in this movie. And then he walked away. And then Forster read it and called him up. He was like, yes.
Hey, by the way, I'm in this movie.
I will be in this movie. And he was happy for it because Robert, no one was hiring Robert Forster at that time. In the 90s, he was a has-been. But I'm sure because Tarantino's a fan of Vigilante, which is a crazy revenge movie, like a B-revenge film with him and Fred Williamson, the ex-football player.
Yeah.
He ends up having a bunch of crazy, crazy blaxploitation movies. Vigilante's a crazy movie. And it's kind of like Death Wish,
okay,
type of thing, you know, like, yeah. they hurt his family, so they got to go get him. There's this moment where, like, he's in the hospital, Fred Williamson's in the hospital with this dude, or the family, and, like, they're in a coma, and he walks out of the hospital room, Robert Forster, who's Max Cherry and Jackie Brown, he's sitting in the hallway, and they just look at each other, and then Forster gets up, and then they just walk down the hallway through the door straight into revenge. It's awesome. So that's part of the reason why you got him to do it, because it's great. Jackie Brown, awesome movie. For a long time, my favorite, I think. For a long time, it would be that or Kill Bill, up until his recent output. It's such a fun movie. The score is ridiculous. No original music at all in that movie. All 100% pre-recorded.
Awesome stuff.
Which is, you know, like a very Scorsese thing to do. Scorsese does that a lot. Tarantino and Scorsese have a similar knack for finding music that on the face would almost be incongruous for a scene, but then when it's played together, it's like, oh, this shit works, man. This is great, you know? One of his many influences, the Tarantino influences throughout fucking Hollywood, as we know it. After Jackie Brown, a couple years, because Jackie Brown was 97. Didn't put out his next movie until 2002, 2003, something like that. And then, I mean, we're looking at it. Between 93 and 97, he wrote, directed, or acted in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 projects?
Yeah.
In 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, dude maybe needed a bit of a break.
Right? Yeah, so he took off 5 years. So
he took off 5 years, but he didn't necessarily take it off.
No.
Spent a lot of that time working on the huge 200-plus page screenplay that ended up being Kill Bill.
Volume 1 and 2.
The way Kill Bill came about, Drew, this is kind of a habit of Tarantino, it looks like. Hanging out on the script on the set of Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging out and talking to Uma Thurman, who he had to convince Uma Thurman to be in the movie, to the point of he had her on the phone, he was like begging, and then he broke out a screenplay and just started reading from the screenplay over the phone to her. Imagine being on the other end of that, like, this guy is so persistent.
Yeah.
And then she does it and ends up being, like, in her most memorable role. Until they have the conversation on that set, of the Pulp Fiction set, talking about a revenge movie based a lot on the kung fu films of the 70s, right?
Yeah.
And Uma Thurman's the one that came up with the opening image of a woman all bloodied and beat up in a bridal.
Yeah.
In a bridal gown.
The bride.
The bride, the blood splattered bride. So they came up with that idea together for Pulp Fiction, 94. Fucking 6-7 years later, he finally writes the screenplay, gets Uma Thurman. It's like, yo, you're it. I wrote this for you.
Get in.
We're making this movie.
Let's do this.
For the longest time while they were making the movie, it was going to be one long epic movie, like a 3-hour, maybe even 3-plus-hour epic if you could have gotten away with it. You know, yeah. In the vein of The Good, Bad, and the Ugly or Once Upon a Time in America. But the Weinsteins, oh, the Weinsteins, you know, they're very... And Harvey Weinstein, he's even proven over the years that he does have good taste in movies and an artist, and he often does let artists do what they do, you know. But at the same time, he can also be a fucking brutal, number-crunching asshole. Mm-hmm. They called him Harvey Scissorhands for a reason. He would take movies and fucking cut them up and chop whole things out and shorten it just to make it faster and quicker and make it more entertaining. And it was the Weinstein's idea to split Kill Bill into two movies. Obviously, it looks like more of a money grab than anything. Because now instead of me paying one price for one ticket to see one movie, now I gotta pay for two tickets to see one story, which is now fucking...
The way it goes.
With the Harry Potters and the Hunger Games. No, I'm so sick of that shit. I'm so sick of it.
The next installment.
On the next installment of Kill Bill Volume 8. And even then, they're not all... Anyway, I was gonna say, all those aren't Tarantino movies. Kill Bill comes out 2003. So Tarantino relents, splits into two movies, comes out in 2003. That one's very kung fu film heavy, and also some, you know, there's some Japanime in there, and Sonny Chiba's in there. A shout out to all the Japanese films of the era. The second one came out the next year. More of an emphasis on the Western elements of the movie. So there's more Ennio Morricone music, scenes literally take place in the desert, you know. But then at the same time, there's a lot of swordplay.
Yes.
They're fighting with swords in the desert. I mean, come on.
The entire time,
a trailer in the desert. Yeah. Which is actually,
it's all swords.
It's pretty great. Yeah. It's pretty awesome. Yeah. He wanted Warren Beatty to play Bill.
That would have been good.
And Warren Beatty said yes.
But...
Then he found out that he was expected to do some kung fu training, like 6 months of it.
He's like, fuck that.
He's like, what the fuck? I'm not doing that. He's the one who suggested Carradine.
And then Carradine's like, yeah, I don't have to do any training.
Carradine's like, I may have to touch you on some. So I am an old man. You know? And then you know what? They barely even use his kung fu stuff. He has two scenes where he does a little bit of kung fu. The very last scene in the second one where he gets the five-finger thing. And the whole time they're sitting in chairs anyway, you know? And then he has a little more, a lengthy scene. That's a flashback scene where he fights Michael J. White. But that got cut out. Oh. And it's like on the DVD extras and shit. So you can see it. It's online, I'm sure. Yeah. But then even then, it's not even that spectacular of a fight scene. You know, he's kind of slow, especially against Michael J. White. And the guy is huge.
Yeah.
It's like this guy.
He's Spawn.
He would kill. It's Black Dynamite. Black Dynamite, bro. He would have destroyed old Kane from Kung Fu.
He would have.
But he was like, ah, oh, but he ends up getting cut and then dies. And it's an okay scene. I can see why they cut it. Yeah. So Warren Beatty could have done it. It's not like he was, it would have been funny if he did 6 months worth of training and that was all. It's like, that's all, I mean, we're not making the Matrix here. Fucking, yeah, Uma Thurman was doing all the kung fu and with Gordon Liu. Gordon Liu, he plays multiple characters. In Kill Bill, he's the crazy 88s, the gang with the masks. He's the lead guy and the last one to die. He's the one who gets his legs cut out and then he falls a whole floor down to the water, right? The bloody, bloody water. In the second movie, he is Pai Mei, the guy who trains Uma Thurman in all the flashback scenes. He is the Shaolin Master Killer.
Nice.
From the original Shaolin Master Killer movie, also known as the 36th Chamber. Mm-hmm. Which is a play on the whole, the kung fu thing of the monks. There are 35 chambers, and they have to, like, train to get through all of them. When you get to the 35th chambers, when you reach the highest level, you know, of everything, whatever. It's like a video game for life.
Yeah.
And in the movie, Gordon Liu's character, he gets through all the chambers, and he's, like, the super master. And then at the end, they're like, oh, well, now you done it. You get, like, a wish or something. You got to do. What do you want to do?
He's like,
I'm creating a 36th chamber, and that's where you take the kung fu to the people. And the monks are like, you can't do that shit. And he's like, fuck you. And he leaves the monastery and brings the kung fu to the people. And then he finds the people that need revenging. And he fucking helps them get some revenging. That's awesome.
Yeah.
He's a Shaolin Master Killer. Yeah. That's why he's in. He's also another great movie, Eight Diagram Pole Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
People.
I've seen bits and pieces of that.
Yeah, Eight Diagram Pole Fighter, people. That's a crazy movie. Gordon Liu, man, he's awesome. So he has that awesome, you know, he has all those great scenes in both those movies. Sonny Chiba, like I said, he's a Street Fighter, not the Street Fighter with Jean-Claude Van Damme, but the Street Fighter from the 70s, the Japanese ones. The Street Fighter Return of Street Fighter and
Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
Son of Street Fighter. And then Street Fighter 2 Turbo Edition. And then Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition. And then Street Fighter vs. Capcom. And then Street Fighter vs. Capcom vs. Marvel.
Alpha.
And then Street Fighter vs. Capcom vs. Marvel. Alpha divided by Transformers meets G.I. Joe. I won't play that game.
That actually sounds pretty cool.
That sounds like a bitchin'. Sounds like a seizure inducer waiting to happen.
Yeah.
So you got it's so Kill Bill is unfortunately split up as two movies. He's been talking about doing the whole bloody affair and putting it out there, and one day we'll get to see it. But maybe. Until then, that's the only movie I don't have on the Divid. Kill Bill Volume 2. Because I've been waiting for this. Since Kill Bill came out in theaters, I'm waiting for the two to come out.
12 years later.
12 years later. And guess what, guys? I'm still waiting. I ain't giving in. The Kill Bill movies, they're constantly putting them up and down on the Netflix. If I ever have the bug up my butt to watch a second one, I can do it. If I want to watch the first one, I got my Japanese cut.
Oh, it's so much better.
People, the Japanese cut, in case you didn't know, all right, here we go. Back in the day, to get violent scenes past the ratings board, the Hollywood censorship board, a lot of scenes were set in black and white.
Yes.
To make the, just so you don't see all the red blood. Mm-hmm. That is why when in the first Kill Bill, when you see it on TV or you remember seeing it in theater, or if you check it out on Netflix or if you have your normal DVD,
it goes black and white
for the whole fight scene of the crazy against the crazy 88s. That was because the NBA was like, you got to cut this down hardcore. There's way too much blood in the scene. They used something like 500 gallons of blood.
Absurd.
An absurd amount of blood, fake blood. Like, you got to do something about this. So Tarantino was like, all right, you know what? Fucking, he cut out like 15, 20 seconds of blood splatters, of slicings and blood splatters. But for the most part, it was black and white. Boom. For pretty much the majority of that massacre of the crazy 88.
Yeah.
And it's even done in a way in the movie, the way it happens, the way it switches over, it's like, oh, well, it fits.
Yeah.
It works. It's a weird choice, not knowing the backstory, not knowing any of that stuff. You've just seen the movie. That's a weird choice for it to also just go black and white. But it's Tarantino. He's a weird guy. He's referencing something. That's mm-hmm. what people automatically think. Tarantino then took his actual cut of the movie and played it for theaters and audiences in Japan. And there were, if you look it up, he even told audiences at that time, he was like, this is my intended cut of the movie and only you guys get to see it because they don't want to play this in America. And it's that whole scene is in pure, glorious red and yellow and brown color. So the colors are so bright and all that stuff that got cut out got put back in. So it's more like blood spraying on the walls and shit. And also the animated sequence that he had done, more violent. The only stuff that they took out of that was like horrible violence. They put all that back in and something else. Violent stuff. All the craziness that they made him cut out is all put back into the Japanese cut. And it is so good.
Because, I mean, the Japanese love their violence.
The Japanese they don't have a bug up their butt about it. Even here, violence is very permissible in our entertainment, but we still only go to a certain point.
Yeah.
In Japan, they have gone over that line. I think something happens when two of your cities are wiped off the face of the planet in a second.
Yes.
I think it changes you a little bit.
As a culture, probably.
It might have an effect on you.
Yeah.
So, that's if you can get your hands on that somehow. Oh, you know what we should do? Wow, would Tarantino even allow this? Is this possible? Copyright? Can I have a screening? I guess if I don't charge for it.
Of the Japanese cut?
Of the Japanese cut.
As long as you don't charge for it.
If I don't charge for it, I'm not making any money. I'm just showing my DVD. I'm just renting out a place and showing my DVD. You want to show up.
That's cool.
See, but it costs like $200 to rent a place like the NZM.
Well, then you got to cough up the $200.
You think people would show up?
I don't know. Would they?
Would people show up? And then, even then, it's only for half a movie. Because I ain't showing the second part. No. Might have to supplement it with something else. People like their double features.
You could find somebody with a copy of Kill Bill Volume 2.
No, I'm saying I don't even want to show Kill Bill Volume 2. Fuck that movie. No, not fuck. It's a good movie. I really like that movie for sure. But it's there's no like Japanese cut of the second one. There's nothing special about that second one to warrant having people coming out to see it. It would have to be like, here's the Japanese cut of Kill Bill Volume 1, which most people haven't seen, and then like another weird, like here's the X-rated RoboCop.
For violence.
But there's still, that's a little more readily available out there.
Yeah.
I actually think that might even be the version that's on the Netflix. It might be the unrated version.
It's the TVMA.
TVMA?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Or is it? No, it might be NR.
NR. Yeah, not rated. Yeah. We'll think about it. I'll figure something out. Because that's fun. The movie is fucking fun to watch.
It is. Yeah. Super bloody.
And then he took a few years off again. Because, you know, he's trying to figure out what he's going to do next. You know, he's not anxious anymore. In the 90s, he was making a name for himself. He was hot. He had the fire. At this point, now he's fucking Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Right? He has a clout to be able to, like, oh, I'm going to indulge in some, in our cinematic fetishes. So he got together with his buddy Robert Rodriguez.
But before that, he directed two episodes of CSI Crime Scene.
That's right, did the CSI stuff, yeah. He was just bored. He needed coke money or something. Allegedly. So they get together and they come up with the idea for Grindhouse.
Yep.
Where they're going to make two movies that are throwback type movies, like deliberate, blatant throwback movies.
Throwback B movies.
Throwback yeah. B movies to different genres, each one picking a different genre. And then they're also going to make a bunch of fake trailers to play before and between the movies because they're trying to replicate that old double feature experience that they had back in the 70s.
Like Machete, which turned into its
own movie. Turned into a real movie?
That's so awesome.
The Rob Zombie trailer, the She-Wolves of the SS, that almost got turned into a movie.
Oh, really?
And Hobo with a Shotgun.
Yeah, that got turned into
Hobo with a Shotgun. That was a contest. They had a contest. You guys make your own crazy trailer, and we'll pick the winner to put in Grindhouse. Some guy came up, some Canadian dude came up with Hobo with a Shotgun.
And then
that won. And then that got turned into a movie. So yeah, that's fucking Grindhouse.
Fucking Rucker Howard.
So we got Hobo with a Shotgun, two Machete movies grown out of Grindhouse.
There's a third Machete movie coming.
Hopefully. Machete Kills Machete Again in space. Machete Kills Again in space. I hope so. Even though Machete Kills wasn't very good.
No.
It wasn't as good as the first one.
No, but if they go to space.
But if they go to space, I'll go. I'm there. So you do Grindhouse. Rodriguez does Planet Terror, which is a throwback to like the horror films of the 70s. Awesome. Awesome movie. I love it. Very gross and
oh yeah, and with Josh Brolin and the stuff that coming off his face.
Nikki Katz falling apart and he rubs that shit on his face.
His wife with the needles.
Oh, the needle thing. That's so... And then Tarantino did Death Proof, which was his homage to 70s car movies like Vanishing Point, Two Lane Blacktop, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry. You know, just movies that are about the car chases and the muscle cars and shit like that. There's even a little bit of that in the Thunderbolt
and
Lightfoot.
And there's a psycho who traps you in his car and drives crazy and you die inside.
The idea for Death Proof, Drew, came from Tarantino. He was buying a car. He had a car. And he was talking to some people about, you know, just making the car safer or something, or the safety of the car. And some dude was like, well, you know, for $15,000, $20,000, you can death proof any car. And that phrase stuck with him.
Death proof.
And the idea of death proofing a car. And that's how he came up with Stuntman Mike and all that crazy shit. Of all Tarantino's movies, this one by far made the least amount of money.
By far.
Like, I mean, not including like Reservoir Dogs, which it was an indie movie. You know, it's also early 90s, a different time. That fucking Grindhouse should open up to like at least... Even though it's an R-rated movie, should open to at least like $30, $40 million. Had like a $10 million opening weekend.
No.
Ended up grossing like $20 overall total, and then out of the theaters. That's why the movies got split up onto separate DVDs, which means there's no... Instead of putting them all together with all the trailers, they're on separate DVDs and the trailers aren't on them because they were trying to recoup their money.
No.
America fucked up on that one, man.
Oh, yeah.
First off...
We saw it the right way.
Yeah, we saw it at the Aloma Cinema Grill where we had pictures of beer and shit.
And pizza.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was the right way to see that movie.
That was. It was awesome.
But America fucked up, man. You were giving us two movies for the price of one, and America was like,
nah,
I'm good. I'm going to sit over here and fucking... What the... That made me mad.
Yeah.
That made me mad.
I'm sure.
And Tarantino has gone on to say that Death Proof is his worst movie. But at the same time, he's still proud of it.
Of course, he's still, gotta be.
And it's a crazy movie.
It is. It's nuts.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell's awesome.
Kurt Russell's awesome. The stunts are awesome. If I was gonna rank the Tarantino movies, I guess I'll put it at the bottom.
The chick holding on to the hood of the car is so fucking tense.
What do they call that? They call that game Pirate's Mask? No, they called it something or other.
Whatever.
Yeah, and then Sonny and Mike shows up and then starts fucking with him, and then they go chase him down. That whole sequence is like 20 minutes of just car chasing.
And it's so tense.
So good. And then the car is like smashing into each other and shit. You know, no CGI or nothing. So good. So good. Makes me want to rewatch it, as a matter of fact. But it did not do so well, so Tarantino's like, all right, let me regroup here. This is my first real failure financially and even critically when it comes to my movie. So let me really take a step back and figure out what I want to do next. He broke out that old idea that he was talking about this idea since the 90s. An extremely loose remake of the 70s Italian film Inglourious Basterds. Mm-hmm. Loose in the sense that both movies are set during World War II. They both involve Allied forces behind enemy lines killing Nazis. And they're both called Inglourious Basterds.
That's about it.
That's it. They're even spelled differently.
Yeah.
Tarantino's like, you misspelled them. Both words.
Yep.
And people are like, why'd you do it? And he's like, if an artist has to explain his flourishes, then what's the point? But here's the thing. That Inglourious Basterds screenplay was the first of his screenplays to leak on the internet. And everyone got a hold of that thing. I got a hold of that thing, and I read that thing. A really good screenplay. A little different from the final movie, from the shooting script. So it's worth reading for that, you know, to see what was changed. Like, the whole middle section was going to be in black and white, and it said at the beginning of the section on the screenplay, this is going to be done in the style of, like, black and white French cinema of the 50s or whatever. I was like, oh, that's a daring choice, and they didn't end up doing it. Throughout the screenplay, from start to finish, spelling errors galore. Oh, my God. Quentin Tarantino cannot spell. Remember, dropped out of high school at the age of 16.
Yeah.
Cannot spell for the life of him.
Oh, wow.
And apparently, I don't know if he uses a typewriter. He doesn't know what the red squiggly line under each word means.
Okay.
Or how to fix that. He just ignores. Maybe he thinks the red squiggly line is like, oh, I like this word. Oh, the computer's complimenting me on my...
Spell check.
He spells Boston. B-O-S-T-I-N.
Boston.
Over and over. So maybe he just misspelled Inglourious Basterds.
Maybe he just can't spell.
He can't. No, he definitely. Not that he can't spell. He definitely can't spell. I'm saying maybe he misspelled Inglourious Basterds when people point out to him. He's like, embarrassed. Yeah. He's like, that's fine. That's fine. But spelling errors aside, Inglourious Basterds comes out. And it's fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's good.
It's a World War II movie. Elements again of the spaghetti western, but between Kill Bill and Inglourious Basterds, he is really flirting with the western genre. You know, there are moments in both movies where they're straight up western style, and then other moments where he's blending western stuff, motifs with other things. And you know, the western and the war movie kind of, they can go hand in hand.
It all depends on what war you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, or the scenario. Like in this one, it's a men on a mission type thing, so that covers both Magnificent Seven and The Dirty Dozen. And both of those influences on Tarantino, right? The reason Inglourious Basterds does stand out for me among his other movies is because of all his movies. All his movies are super cool.
Yeah.
And they're all fun. And they're, you know, taking all the things that he likes about movies and he's smashing them together and he's making something awesome. Inglourious Basterds is the first time he made a movie that actually feels like it's saying something.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, because it is.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction's cool.
The power of cinema.
It's the power of cinema, the power of movies. Movies can change lives, that type of thing. I mean, film, the actual medium of film itself, the film itself becomes a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, when they explode it in a theater, they even have to set up how that shit's so explosive.
Yeah.
You know, with a whole Samuel L. Jackson voiceover thing, right? That was awesome. And then, you know, they're killing all the Nazis in a movie theater while they're watching fucking propaganda. And then when you think about that, now you are sitting in a movie theater watching a bunch of Nazis.
In a movie theater.
In a movie theater getting gunned down. First, you're watching Nazis cheer on Americans getting gunned down, Allied forces. And then you're like, oh, fuck those Nazis. And then they're getting gunned down by Americans. And then you're like, yeah. What if a bunch of Nazis then ran to the theater and then shot you up? Meta. Whoa, shit. Whoa, meta. That would have been crazy.
Yeah.
That...
Lots of levels there, Chris.
A lot of
layers.
That's some Inception type shit there. You got to ride the kick out of that one if you want to keep your sanity. So, yeah, I mean, there's... And then On top of that, it introduced America to Christoph Waltz, because they couldn't find anyone.
Yeah.
Almost went to DiCaprio, but he just... Nothing against DiCaprio, but he couldn't handle the linguistic challenges of having to speak four different languages.
Yeah, no, Christoph Waltz doesn't have a problem with that.
Christoph Waltz is a polyglot. He happens to speak many languages, you know? So he's like, boom, you are perfect. And he came in at like the last minute. They were like, we're not going to find our hand sanitizer. Now, part of the reason why DiCaprio almost got that role is because they became friends like around 2000. After Jackie Brown, you know, because you know Hollywood is. Everyone rolls in circles. And, you know, David Blaine comes to your party, does some tricks.
Yep.
Tarantino's in the corner, you know, smoking some weed. Like, what's up, bro?
How's it going?
You gonna Bogart that shit? Hey, Bogart, that's a guy. Hey. That's a Hollywood guy. Hollywood term. Hi-yo. They became friends in 2000. From that point forward, Tarantino sent all of his screenplays to DiCaprio just with the hope that he may want to play something in one of his movies.
No.
So he read everything from 2000 forward. So when Inglourious Basterds came around, he was like, oh, I'm interested in Hans Landa. But they couldn't make it work out. Then when, that's how he ends up being in Django. Because he reads Django, and then he's like, oh, you know what? I think we could do something here. We could make this work. But before we go there, Inglourious Basterds, crazy movie. It's got also Eli Roth.
Yeah.
As
the Jew Bear.
The Jew Bear. Donnie Donowitz. Who Tarantino says Donnie Donowitz is the grandfather of the producer guy in True Romance. So that's buying all the coke.
Yeah.
And he's got the war scenes playing and he's walking around in his bathrobe. That's the Bear Jew's grandson.
Okay.
That's what he made of himself. Also, he says that obviously this is retrofitting, but the Brad Pitt's character in True Romance, that's Aldo Raine's grandson.
Of course.
Of course. Cousin, yeah. I just look like him. First time working together.
Yeah.
Right? With Brad Pitt?
Yeah, because Brad Pitt was a stoner on the couch in
That was with Tony Scott. That was Tony Scott. You know, also we skipped over writing wise, Tarantino, because of the Tony Scott connection, Tony Scott invited him to the set of Crimson Peak to help him with on-set rewrites.
Oh, really?
And he wrote a lot of the stuff that Hackman and Denzel ended up saying. Apparently, Denzel got into it a little bit with Tarantino over his use of the N-word. Tarantino loves using the N-word in some of his movies.
Especially the one from 2012. Good Lord.
Oh, that set a record for use. But it's about the movie, though. We just start talking about Django Unchained. Django Unchained. It's about slavery.
It's a slavery movie. Yeah. They're going to say nigger a lot.
They're going to say it a lot. Here's the thing. If you want to believe him, you don't want to believe him, it's up to you. Tarantino, though, has said that the reason he makes movies he makes are always revenge movies and like blaxploitation type movies is because he's... With his films, one thing he is trying to do is trying to combat a bunch of racism and hatred and just general hate. He hates that stuff.
Yeah.
So he may write like racist type characters, but then that brings up a question.
But that makes you hate those characters even more.
That's the thing. Like Scorsese, he writes a lot of characters that are very racist. Does that make Scorsese racist? Or are his characters racist? Oftentimes, no. Every time, the racist character is also some sort of criminal or dirtbag or someone you're not supposed to like
makes
anyway.
You hate them even more.
You're supposed to hate them even more. But you don't always. Because it's a movie.
Yeah.
You feel weird about this because it's a made-up creation. Pulp Fiction. He plays the wife of Bonnie, and he's talking about the dead nigger storage.
Yeah.
And he says the word over and over, over and over and over. And over. It's like, oh, my God. And then you find out, they do sort of like a flash forward. What if his wife comes home to see the move in the body, and Bonnie is black?
Yeah.
Okay? So now, does Tarantino think that... Like, what's up with the character? Is the character then the type of person who, like, I'm married to a black woman, so as such, I am allowed to use this word?
Maybe.
If that's the case, does Tarantino think that?
Maybe.
Like, does he think that far ahead? Like, is this just the way his character thinks, but it's not the way he thinks? Or did he just write the character that way because that's the way he is?
Perhaps.
One of those things, right? It's the art. How do you separate the art from the artist?
You'll never know, Chris.
Unless I actually get to hang out with him for a while. Get him to drop his guard and wait for him to start saying some crazy racist shit, which he probably won't say because, like we said earlier, he's a dude making a movie where your leading character is a 40-year-old black woman.
Yeah.
Again, who's doing that? No one. No one's doing that. All right. And then he makes Django, who Spike Lee has always been a huge critic of Tarantino. Mm-hmm. Ever since, I mean, everything since Pulp Fiction, I think.
I'm sure he loved Django.
He never even saw Django. He hated on it from the day it was announced. People were kept asking about it. He was like, fuck that movie. Fuck him for making that movie. Our history is not a comic book for you to just, you know, make some funny action movie about. And then the whole time I'm thinking, like, Spike.
Chill, bro.
Chill out, dude. First off, then he goes on to admit he hasn't seen the movie. We'll never see it. It's like, well, then you can't criticize it.
Well, yeah, then shut your mouth.
You don't know the context. You see the trailers and you assume what it is. You don't know. And then if you tell him that, he'd be like, oh, I know.
So no, you don't.
So it's like, you know what, just go to another Knicks game. They're horrible. They're losing. You know, wallow in their awfulness. Because, you know, I mean, Spike. And Spike, we're talking about Spike Lee here. Dude did do the right thing.
Yeah.
If he only did do the right thing, he would still be motherfucking Spike Lee. Like, but this is the man. You know?
He did other things.
He has done other things. But I'm saying, if he only did one movie and it was that, then he would still be, people would still know who he is. Mm-hmm. You know? But he's made Jungle Fever. He made fucking Inside Man. He's made good movies too.
Yeah.
Outside that, Summer of Sam. He knows what's up. Maybe we'll do a Spike Lee one.
Spike Lee joint.
Spike Lee joints. Old Boy, not a Spike Lee joint.
No.
That was a Spike Lee film.
Yes.
Because he hated it. And also that was one, the Harvey Scissorhands thing. Mm-hmm. So Django sets a record for use of the N-word, which is like, you know, going into the movie, I was like, oh, this is going to be painful. But partway through it, you're desensitized to it, which isn't a good thing, no. But that's the way it is. I like Michael Madsen, DiCaprio, he had trouble being a racist, like to these people, to their faces, like saying the N-word to Jamie Foxx and shit in front of Samuel Jackson. To the point where at one point, Samuel Jackson had to pull DiCaprio aside on the set and tell him to man up. He's like, dude, man up.
Seriously, like, bro, dude, it's fine.
Like,
let's
bro,
do this.
Like, we're actors. It's cool. Just come here. Do your job. I know you can do it. Let's go. Go fucking curse that guy out.
Yeah.
Go say horrible. Go over there and say horrible, horrible shit. And then he did it, and he was amazing. Should have been nominated, at least nominated for Calvin Candy, because that year he certainly did a whole lot of acting. Was it the most acting? Maybe. But he should have been nominated for most actor. Most supporting actor. Christoph Waltz instead was nominated for Most Supporting Actor. He did a lot of acting.
Oh, yeah, he did.
And he won. Who got nominated? Here we go. Tarantino's directed five actors in Oscar-nominated performances. Travolta for Pulp Fiction, Samuel Jackson, Uma Thurman, Robert Forster, and Christoph Waltz twice. Mm-hmm. Christoph Waltz won both of those. Tarantino has said that Christoph Waltz, besides Samuel Jackson, it's him, Samuel Jackson, and Christoph Waltz. These are the two guys that when they read Tarantino's dialogue, it's like actual words being spoken and not someone reading dialogue. Like, no offense to all the other actors, but like, this is...
But these guys got my shit.
Like, those guys, they just read it perfectly. You know, they ingest it and spit it out, and it's beautiful. And it is beautiful. Those guys are great. And they're crazy movies. Django... Yeah. Nat then sees Tarantino flirting with the Western genre hardcore, like making, like I fucking the Western genre, you know? Except that most of it's not set in the West, it's set in the South. It's an antebellum Western, it's a Southern. He called it a bunch of different things, but he would never call it a Western because it never was truly 100% a Western.
No.
Just because of the setting.
That's going to be the next one.
The Hateful Eight.
Straight up.
Comes out this year, I think.
Yeah.
And talk about crazy cast. Now he's like, I can get whatever.
Yeah, now
cast
he can
I
get
whoever, I can get whoever the fuck I want. It's got Kurt Russell, Bruce Dern, Michael Madsen, Tim Roth, Samuel Jackson. What's her name? The Jennifer Jason Leigh.
He's worked with most of these people already.
Yes, he has.
At this point in time.
Yes, yeah, it's exciting, which makes it a lot of shorthand, you know, makes it they can play more on the set and come up with more crazy things. Hateful Eight is going to be about how a bunch of different people are holed up in like a general store or an outpost or something, and a crazy storm blizzard comes in, so they're all snowed in, and then not Edward Snowden, but snowed in, and then
bad things.
They're all hateful. They're all hateful people, so they start hating on each other, start hating with their guns.
It's just going to be a lot of blood.
It's going to be crazy.
Yeah,
it's going to be crazy.
Probably some hatchets.
Definitely looking forward to it. I'm looking. Should I even bother reading this? I did find this kind of interesting. Right here. He considers Paul Thomas Anderson to be one of his best friends and has praised his work, calling him a filmmaking artist. Mm-hmm. I want to hang out with Paul Thomas Anderson and Quentin Tarantino. I don't even want to see anything.
I want to smoke a
joint. I just want to sit at the table.
I want to sit down and smoke a joint with both of them and just be like, guys.
I just want to, listen to them talk about movies and life and everything. And like, Also, very close friends with Sofia Coppola. So maybe if you can show her how to pick up the pace in her movies a little bit, that'd be pretty
sweet.
Pretty awesome. Born in Knoxville, Tennessee, March 1963. Quentin Jerome Tarantino.
I've been in Knoxville a couple times.
Has a hell of a career. Have you? Is this shithole?
No, I mean, Vanderbilt University's there.
Oh, Vanderbilt. Shout out to Vanderbilt. We got tons of listeners in Vanderbilt.
So, my cousin used to go there, and I had a friend from high school who went up there as well.
Your cousin Vinny?
No, my cousin Lynn.
Oh, that sounds cool. Your cousin Lenny?
Lynn.
Oh, damn it. So close. So close. Excuse me. So Hateful Eight will be, if you count Kill Bill as one movie like he does, Hateful Eight will be his eighth film. He has been saying for a while he wants to make 10 movies and then stop. And that 10th movie is going to be made when he hits 60. He doesn't want to keep making movies after the age of 60. He has said that if something comes along, like he really wants to make it, he'll make it. You know, but for the most part, as a director, he's going to consider himself retired at the age of 60. He believes filmmaking is a young man's game. Old people shouldn't be making movies. And he also likes the idea of having 10 movies. Like, boom, that's my filmography. 10 fucking movies.
Yeah.
So,
call it a day.
So we got Hateful Eight. Two more movies after that. And he's out of here. He's done.
What are they going to be?
We'll find out within... I mean, he's in his 50s now. We'll find out within the next 5-6 years, because then he's going to be done. So enjoy him when we got him. After that, he'll be writing stuff. He's gonna work on novels and film literature and stuff like that. Apparently, he has like a 200-page Superman Returns essay that he's been working on for years.
Okay.
Something like that.
It's kind of weird.
Might just end up putting out a book about Superman Returns and how great it is. He's a strange guy.
Yeah, he is.
He's a strange guy.
Yeah, he is.
So here you go. That's your Crespo DiSo Film School Quentin Tarantino bonus episode. There you go, Drew.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Thanks for helping out. Appreciate it. Drew, sir.
You're welcome.
Cogburn. Thank you for listening, people. Rate us and review us on iTunes. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook. Email us at cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. We'll be back this weekend with episode 113 of Cinema Crespo DiSo. Remember, like all Tarantino movies, watch R-rated films and watch out for that savings and loan stuff. That's dangerous stuff.